Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
We're settling in here on a Friday morning, Fantasy NBA Today. I am Dan Bespris. It's a team effort over here, have successfully dropped our children off at their respective schools. I have returned home, walked the dog, eaten the leftover scraps from breakfasts that my children only partially consumed. I'm filled with the robust energy of the crusts of sun butter and jelly sandwiches. And I'm ready to talk to everybody about fantasy basketball. Hope you guys are doing fine. That's the best we can ask for these days. Thank you to everyone for the birthday wishes yesterday. 40. Ugh. Gross. But I guess, you know, I'm here. I made it. 40. Nuggets won game one of the finals. It did not go over the posted total, so we had that one way off. 197 points. In fact, pace of that game was pretty damn slow. But one thing that definitely influenced the pace was that Miami could not get to the free throw line to save their damn lives. Only 8 fouls called on Denver in the entire basketball game. And to be fair, there are really only like 2 guys for Miami that took the ball to the rim, and they didn't get free throws. The only free throws came to Haywood Highsmith. He went 2 for 2. But Jimmy Butler, none. Adebayo, none. Beyond those guys, you don't expect many. Dave Vincent is a lot of three-pointers, Lowry three-pointers, Caleb Martin typically threes and long twos. Duncan Robinson was bad. Max Strus was epically bad in this game. So that hurt. But, you know, overall, and don't worry, we're going to get to the fantasy stuff in just a little bit. We're doing a team breakdown today. We're on to the Atlanta Hawks, which is, what team number are we on right now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Oh, we've cracked into the second half of them. Atlanta will be the 16th team review, which, again, I think we started doing these like a full month, maybe even longer ago. I like that. That means that we might be able to stretch these bad boys all the way out to free agency. And then you're like, there's a little bit of a dog days thing for basketball offseason podding after free agency, because there's not much the rest of July. That's where we got to dig deep into the box of whatever is. We'll do some mailbag shows too, try to squeeze things along. I suppose we should also try to be done with the team reviews before free agency, because then things are going to change substantially. Try to get some of our draft folks on the pod, but you know, maybe I ought to play a little catch up here. Anyway, we'll talk Atlanta Hawks in a couple of minutes. First, I do want to talk about the playoffs, because the question going into game one was, in terms of fading the team coming off a 7-game series, would Miami be able to keep this game within 9 points? And it sort of bounced back and forth. They were down by high teens for a while. They got it down to whatever it was, like 8, 9, something right around the number, and then Denver ended up winning by 11. So again, it did come down to basically, will Miami hit a meaningless three-pointer at the buzzer? They didn't. But I leaned in the direction of the over, figuring that Denver would want to push the pace here against a Miami team coming off a long series, and they just sort of didn't do it. So missed that handicap. Game one overs don't work every single time. They work often, and they work even more often when one of the two teams is pooped, because they don't usually have the sort of intensity to dig in on defense. But as it turned out here, Denver didn't run it. Miami did a good job trying to get back, keep the transition baskets from happening regularly. and it turned it into a little bit more of a grind it out kind of ball game. So what does that do to everything else we talked about? Well, we mentioned that Denver had a huge advantage on the rest side going into game one. So I figured they would win the game. I didn't know if they were going to win it by 9. As it turned out, they did. Barely, but they did. I thought it would go over. It didn't. So game two opened up with Denver as a 10-point favorite, and it's dropped quickly down to 8. Total opened at 216. That has dropped quickly to 214, and it's actually kind of inched back up a little bit since then. So the question is now going into game two, if you're just a casual basketball fan or a better, what might look different in game two? Well, for one, Miami kind of played their guys like this game was, I don't want to say the giveaway game because they thought maybe they could snatch one, but a little bit of the giveaway game. No one on Miami hit 40 minutes. Adebayo got the closest. He was at 39 minutes and 58 seconds, which I get it, hair splitting 101. But Jimmy Butler was only at 38. That's pretty low for their main guys. While over on the Denver side, a hyper-rested Nuggets team played Jamal Murray 44 out of the 48 minutes in a game where they were largely up double digits. Jokic was at 40 and a half. They got him a little bit of extra rest in the first half because they were able to maintain. I think he left the game when they were up by 9 and he came back in when they were up by 8 or something like that. So they just sort of like stretched the Jokic rest a little bit longer. Michael Porter Jr. played 43 minutes in this game. And I should say they only won by 11, despite outshooting Miami by 10% and taking 18 more free throws than the Heat. When you looked at, if I didn't see the final score, and I just saw the discrepancy in field goal percent and free throw count, I would have assumed that Denver won this game by 15 to 20 points. The fact that it was only 11, which I know was kind of weird to say because 11 is a relatively comfortable win, was, I thought, reason for Miami to have maybe a tiny bit more optimism than I had about them going into the series. As you recall, yesterday I said, I think Denver wins this series, and I think this is the opponent where Miami finally plays against someone playing serious basketball. Because Boston wasn't playing serious basketball. I know they took that series to 7 games. Boston did that with just sheer overwhelming talent, but they just didn't play serious basketball pretty much throughout the playoffs. Milwaukee never woke up. They didn't play serious basketball. The Knicks are, like, they tried their best, but they didn't have the talent there. When Miami's taking on teams that are similar in talent to themselves, they've spanked them. Then they've been able to overwhelm teams that have more talent by just playing, and I'll use the expression again, more serious basketball. What the hell do I mean by that? Just a team that knows what it is successful doing and does it for as close to 48 minutes as possible. And it feels so simple, but it's not. Because basketball is a heated game of adrenaline, of hypercharged mega athletes, where it's very easy to lose the thread on what you're supposed to be doing. I thought that the four teams in these playoffs that have done the best job of holding on to the thread of who they are have been Denver, easily number one, Miami, easily 1B in that department, and then I actually thought the Lakers and the Warriors were probably the third and fourth most, again, serious basketball teams in these playoffs. The Warriors, because they know what they're successful with, and they don't go away from it. And that's how they were as competitive and as they were against the Lakers team that, frankly, should have won that series. And they did. Because the Warriors had Steph, and they got almost nothing else throughout basically that entire series. They had, like, one Andrew Wiggins game, and that was about it. But everything they did was built off of Steph, and they did it every single time down the floor. And damn it, it almost got them through that series. The Lakers knew what they were. They played downhill. They went at the bucket almost every single time. And then every once in a while, LeBron would take an ill-advised pull-up three. But, you know, he's one of the greatest basketball players in the history of the NBA. So if you're the Lakers, you're like, all right, I just sort of eat this every once in a while. Folks, picture this nightmare scenario. You're hosting friends for the big game. It's neck and neck in the fourth quarter, and suddenly you realize you're out of drinks. Boo, say all of your friends. You start to sweat. Your friends turn on you. You're forced to go on a last-second drink run and end up missing the game-winning touchdown while in line. Oh, no. Terrifying, isn't it? Luckily, you can avoid the drama with Drizly, the go-to app for drink delivery. With Drizly, you can shop a huge selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered right to your watch party. Compare prices across multiple stores in your area, find the best deals on game day drinks, and get back to armchair quarterbacking from, you guessed it, your armchair. Download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today. Must be 21 plus, not available in all locations. And then the Nuggets and the Heat, who are here in the finals. Obviously, you don't get this far without playing serious basketball. So I thought both of the teams did kind of what you expected them to do. And then on the Denver side, it just worked better because Jimmy Butler didn't have that great of a shooting game. Adebayo was able to use his athleticism in a way, frankly, kind of similar to what Anthony Davis was trying to do on offense and did sometimes throughout this series. But Adebayo, not at all AD on defense. I know we're seeing these things flying around on Twitter about how, oh, can Bam show that he's the defensive player? No. Zero steals, zero blocks. He doesn't have the length to impact Nikola Jokic the way that, or really a lot of these Nuggets guys, the way that Anthony Davis could. Everything that Denver did, everything the Warriors did, everything the Grizzlies did, was to try to avoid Anthony Davis in a way that none of these teams are treating anybody else that way. And to me, you know, when I look at this series, and the reason I felt pretty confident about Denver coming through it, and why, I know, again, like a Nikola Jokic minus 300 MVP ticket is not a particularly wise wager, but like if you felt there's a 75% chance the team was going to win the series, then that's the bet to make. Not now. Nuggets won game one. I don't know that there's an opportunity. I mean, if Miami can steal one, then that's your chance, but then I don't know if you're going to want to do it anymore. The reason to have a little bit of optimism on the Miami side is that you shot terribly and you only lost by 11. Could they somehow even out the field goal percent a little bit? But that's kind of the optical illusion with Denver, that you're ever going to maybe catch them in offensive efficiency. You're not gonna. Could you catch them for one game? Yeah, maybe. But can you catch them over a long series? I strongly doubt it. Denver hadn't even really figured out what they want to do defensively with the Heat yet. And they still basically coasted through this game. You want the evidence that Denver coasted? Nikola Jokic took 12 shots. He didn't even get himself all that involved. You know, we know that there's that Jokic other gear when he really badly needs it. He didn't need it. Jamal Murray's been amazing. I still think that he's getting not even close to the credit that he deserves in these playoffs. Jokic, not to say that Denver's not, because that's this ridiculous harebrained notion that like, oh, nobody respects the Nuggets. No, we all, dude. They've been the favorite. That's wrong. But between the players on Denver, who was it? Someone, I heard an audio clip of somebody trying to claim that Michael Porter Jr. was Denver's second best player. Guys, let's not make stories where there aren't stories. Jamal Murray has been terrific in the postseason again. But that's not the point. We're getting off topic. The Nuggets have more, far more in the tank than we saw in this ballgame. And we've seen them make proper adjustments and stick to what works. We've seen the Heat continue to stick to what works. They lost those games to the Celtics. They lost games 5 and 6 to Boston because the Celtics just got wildly hot from three-point land. They lost game... Sorry, that was 4 and 5, I should say. They lost game 6 to the Celtics because Miami could not hit a two-pointer to save their lives. That's not that crazy. They need to be able to attack the rim a little bit better than they did. in this one. I mean, that's what Miami is going to be talking about. We got to get something going to the bucket because Denver is not like the world beater defensively. They've been decent in these playoffs. Don't take anything away from the Nuggets, but Nikola Jokic is not what you'd call a traditional rim protector. He's just a big dude back there that wants to avoid fouling people, and Miami's got to find a way to get him to commit a couple of fouls. But their identity is they got two guys that go towards the rim and then like 13 that don't. Can Miami make these games competitive? Yeah. But it sure feels a lot like the Lakers series where Denver can just sort of keep you at bay just enough. Close ball game, close ball game, close ball game. Denver wins it. But what about this spread on game two? You've got to figure that now the rest advantage starts to level off a little bit. Can the Heat come out and just play better from the outset? I think the answer is probably yes. Game two, to me, feels like one that could just be a little bit closer throughout, even if I think the Nuggets ultimately do win it. So I would lean, and this game is not for two more days, but it's the Friday show, so we got to cover anything over the weekend. It's a Sunday evening game. I think I kind of like the Heat catching a whole bunch of points. I think it's at 8. If you maybe can get that, you think it'll bet back up to 8.5 or 9? I doubt it. Maybe 8.5. Don't think it comes down any farther. But if you can get 8.5 or 9, that's probably where I would lean in that one. I'll admit I have no idea what's going on with the total. I thought this first game Nuggets would be able to get out and run a little bit more. You can see the Heat were able to focus hard on slowing down any transition stuff. I do wonder if the Nuggets find a way to get out in transition a tiny bit more. I saw, at least early in this game, Jokic wasn't the main rebounder early in the contest. In fact, Michael Porter Jr. led the team in boards with 13 because Miami was trying to pull Jokic away from the rim a little bit. Not to necessarily open things up because of his defense, but just to space the floor. That's something the Heat can do that the Lakers didn't. So does that change things a little bit? Does that make it a little harder for Denver to get out in transition? We'll see after game two. But again, I don't think I have a great feel for the total in game two. 214.5 feels like a number that they could clear, but the pace would have to pick up pretty considerably. So I think I'd prefer the Heat if I'm looking at anything in that ballgame. And we'll cover that again on Monday when we loop back around on the other side. Team du jour is the Atlanta Hawks today. The Atlanta Hawks today. And we'll tell you all about them after we remind you guys of our buddies over at manscaped.com. Coupon code ETHOS20. ETHOS, ETHOS, the numbers 20. ETHOS20 gets you 20% off and free shipping on your Father's Day gift at manscaped.com. You've got 15 days. No, 16 days? What the hell day is that? Is that June 18th? June 18th. You got 16 days from the day I'm recording this show, although maybe some of you are listening to it 17 days away. 15 days away. Dan can count. Can he? Unclear right now. The Performance Package 4.0, the Lawnmower 4.0, Boxers, the Weed Whacker, and my new favorite, the Beard Hedger. You know what's actually the nice thing about the Beard Hedger? It doesn't have a genitalia-themed name. I can talk about it all day, and I don't have to cover the fact that every joke at Manscaped is about balls. This is a classy program. This is a family show, for goodness sake. It was time. It was long overdue. Manscaped heard your calls, your clarion call, for something to actually trim beards by very small increments. And they have done it. They've made another amazing trimmer. And this time, it's a beard hedger. Half millimeter adjustments on the beard hedger from 0.5 mils up to 10. Finally, you can get that beard length the exact length you want it at any part in your face. I know for me, when I'm shaving my chin, the hairs on my chin tend to grow a little bit thicker. And I actually have to bring them down a tiny bit more. With the previous iteration, with the Lawnmower 4.0 and the 3 and 6 millimeter attachments, I had to do 6 millimeters on all of my face and then 3 for just like a couple of corners of my chin. And it was hard to get that to look right without like an obvious length differential. But now I can go 6 mils all the way around and I can go 5, 5.5 if I want, right around the chin, 4.5 if I feel like I want to take off just a little bit more. This is it, guys. This is the beard hedger to end all beard hedgers. You won't have to get another one for a freaking decade. That's the nice thing about Manscaped. Their stuff just lasts forever because it's waterproof, because they use awesome, awesome pieces, materials. It's just better. They make a better hair trimming product, no matter which one you like, than the competition. So check them out now at manscaped.com, promo code ETHOS20. Grab something before Father's Day, and guess what? If you guys do that, you're going to basically lock in that we get to continue hanging out with Manscaped for next season of the NBA. So you're doing it for yourself, you're doing it for Fantasy NBA Today, and you're doing it for the father figure in your life to clean up their damn dirty hair. The Atlanta Hawks. So, they changed coaches mid-season. And not much else actually changed for Atlanta. They couldn't get out of the play-in tournament. Almost did. Almost did. Remember, they were leading the Heat with what? No, that wasn't right. How the hell did that go? Hawks beat somebody, didn't they? The Hawks make the playoffs? Yeah, they made the playoffs. Come on, Dan, get it together. Hawks made the playoffs, and then they got steamrolled, basically, by the Celtics. Boston, again, on serious basketball. They were just beating up on Atlanta, and they were like, meh, we'll just see what happens. And then the Hawks won whatever it was, one game, two games. Doesn't matter. I don't even remember anymore. Unserious basketball. But what does this mean for Atlanta going forward? Because we've now kind of seen the Hawks. They were 41-41 this year. They were 43-39 last year. They were 41-31 in the 72 game, like mid-COVID season, not early COVID. And that was the year where it was like, oh, maybe there's something here. I think that was the Nate McMillan switchover season. But it's been a steady decline since that kind of surprising 41-31 year. And for Trae Young, that was a big kind of he woke up season, but he hasn't really been able to duplicate that. Can the Hawks actually get over the hump with Trae Young as their focal point? You could almost ask a similar question about the Mavericks, although, you know, we've seen Dallas, like Dallas was 52-30 last year with Luka and Jalen Brunson, and Mavs were 42-30 in the 72-game season. So, you know, I think Luka has answered those questions a little bit better. So that leaves Trae now as, okay, well, is this a player that can lead us not only into the playoffs, because he's gotten them there, sort of, but through some of them. From a fantasy standpoint, Trae Young's upside is pretty much baked into his durability. He's generally a durable dude, and that's good. He plays through little nagging injuries. He played 73 out of 82 games again this year. He's been largely healthy. I know he burned one of my teams, and I've told this story of far too many times, considering how inconsequential it is in the grand scheme of life. But in his career so far, he's missed one game, like a dozen games in the COVID year. That's a tough one. You can't really blame stuff on anybody. 9 in the 72-game season. 6, that's it, last year. And then 9 again this year. And that's better than league average in all but, I think, one of those seasons. That's good. But from a per-game standpoint, he's generally underperformed, with the exception of, I guess you could say, last year, because he shot 46% from the field, 38% from downtown, 90.4 at the free throw line. And I think the hope for a lot of us, I had Trae Young in precisely 0-9 category leagues this season. The hope for a lot of us that I was unwilling to buy into was, oh, that 46%, that's going to stick. Because the Hawks brought in DeJounte Murray, so Trae Young's opportunities should be easier. And even if you take the ball out of his hands a little bit, the efficiency should at least hang on. So small drop-off was the hope. And instead, He dropped all the way back where he was before the efficiency spike of last season. He shot 42.9%, was actually lower than his career mark. His three-point field goal percent was the lowest since his rookie season at 33.5%. His free throw number was still very good, but did come back down 2 percentage points. His rebounding was lower by almost a full rebound. You can probably blame that on DeJounte Murray. His assists actually were a career high by a half of an assist, and his steals tied his career high. So you're looking at it like, well, what's the problem here? Well, the problem is that his usage was indeed a little bit down, not by a ton, but a little bit. And a little goes a long way for a player whose value is heavily baked into every little squeezy drop of usage you can get out of him. The more Trae Young does, the more Trae Young has value. If he loses a little bit of usage, points per game goes down, threes per game goes down, field goal per game typically goes down, although it actually was back up this year because the NBA was like, enough of the cracking down on stupid foul shot stuff, and you know the usual guys got their usual free throws again. Rebounds, those going down sort of counterbalance the assist stuff. And again, I know it wasn't a big usage drop-off, but that hurt. And the other thing that hurt was that it seems like maybe last year was the anomaly in the field goal percent department. He really hasn't been anywhere near 46% any other season. 43.8 was his previous high. And I get it, that's only 2 percentage points. But, I mean, we've seen what we've seen at this point now. So, Trae Young, because his turnovers are stupid high, is probably going to get overdrafted in 9-category leagues because in 8-cat, his value does jump forward. In points leagues, his value is pretty similar to 8-cat because the negative you get out of field goal is counterbalanced by almost the exact same positive in free throw. But again, if you roll points leagues and 8-cat together, he'll go earlier than 9-cat where turnovers is the thing that hurts him the most. And sure, if you want to make sure you've got your assists locked down early, he's a great guy to do it. But he's going to get drafted probably in the second round when his per-game output this year was 49. He just wasn't even close. But he did play in 73 ball games, and so there is a certain value in that. However, there's no way. Trae Young's never going to get underdrafted. It's just not going to happen. If he gets drafted in the second round, the best case scenario for him is like mid-second round per game. So there's no upside built into it. And if you're drafting Trae, you're doing it because you have a particular build in mind. And I still frankly think you could probably get somebody better where he's going to end up going. What about the rest of the Hawks? And frankly, what if Trae Young gets moved? That's still a possibility. We're not going to handicap the team right now with that in mind. Obviously, that would change things dramatically. You'd also get a big name something coming back in a Trae Young trade. So there's really no sense in breaking that down right now. So let's look at some of the other players on the Hawks that had value or close to value, starting at the top. DeJounte Murray, number 36 on a per-game basis, 74 out of 82 games. So also a totals positive. Of course, I just lost where he was in the totals board. You know, the only thing about Basketball Monster that's super annoying is how often you have to make sure you refresh the stupid page. Totals for DeJounte was number 24, which is basically where he went. So he kind of hit his ADP by totals. Trae Young totals was 32, so he still missed his mark there. But certainly on a per-game basis, I think everybody was hoping for more from DeJounte. Prior to the trade to Atlanta, very early in fantasy draft season, his ADP was in the first round. That was when he was still with San Antonio. After the trade, his ADP dropped to about 30. And I think most folks are like, yeah, this feels a little bit low, but by how much? And then he bounced back up to like 17. And he really just, he rubber banded back and forth for a while until it settled right around 20 to 22, which ended up being too high. And he was a perfect case study in me letting myself get talked into a player. This happens to me with one player every damn year. And every damn year I say I'm not going to let it happen next time. And then every damn year I let it happen next time. And this year it was DeJounte Murray, who I was going to just sort of dodge. Because I was like, this dude's going to take a hit, and I don't know exactly how much it's going to be. His steals were down, his rebounds were down, his assists were down. The other stuff was not all that far off where he was in San Antonio, but you just knew he went from a place where literally nobody else would take the ball out of his hands to a place where he was going to play with Trae Young. And, I mean, that's a guy who's going to be top of the league in usage every year. And you can say, oh, there's plenty during a ball game for both of those guys, but it just doesn't work that way. Someone's going to take primary control when you get sort of two of these types of players together, and you kind of had to assume it was going to be Trae. And then, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Cavaliers, and we'll talk about them. It was hard to know, like, because Darius Garland was there already. Was he going to be the guy to take control, or was it going to be Donovan Mitchell? And it was Donovan that came in. It was like, okay, I'm the captain now. Yes, I captain Phillips debt. So what about DeJounte Murray next year? I think there's a chance that he gets drafted towards the middle of the third round. And frankly, I'd be okay with that, because I think there's also a non-zero chance his steals come back up a little bit. Maybe not all the way to 2, but they were at 1.5. Maybe you get him to 1.7. Maybe the field goal percent goes from 46 to 47. Could he get it to 47.5, 48? Probably not. But those little things that could just pivot ever so slightly in his favor could get him from 36 per game to, you know, around 30. And then, on a team that's been pretty consistently around the fringe, this is a club where they're going to need their main guys to play if they want to avoid the play-in tournament and try to get into a safer Eastern Conference playoff seed. So you got to figure that a lot of the games are going to be consequential for them. That's not to say that I think DeJounte Murray is going to be a fantasy draft day value next year. I think he has the chance to be like one of those kind of old men grouping type guy. I know he's not an old man. That it needs a new name. That 25 through 50 range where a lot of the sort of boring stuff falls. DeJounte Murray might actually fall into the boring group next year. We'll see. John Collins. I definitely had no John Collinses this year. I wanted nothing to do with that dude, knowing that DeJounte Murray was going to come to town and be a strong rebounding big guard who also was going to take now the sort of second mantle that, I don't know if you thought John Collins had that before, but his role dried up. And then the Hawks traded for Sadiq Bey. That pushed him for minutes. DeAndre Hunter came into the season healthy. That was always going to push that power forward spot for minutes. And you had two centers on the club, so there's no real wiggle room for Collins to get in at the five unless one of those other guys was hurt. I don't think there's really anywhere for John Collins to go unless Atlanta moves somebody, and that somebody would probably have to be Clint Capella, who is going to be incredibly difficult to move. I think he still has 2 or 3 years left on his contract. We can pull that up while we're talking about it right now. In fact, I probably should have had this window open before I started the show. Dumb, dumb Dano. 2 more years for Capella. Next year, the year after that. John Collins has 2 more and a player option. Trae Young's got 3 and a player option. Bogdanovich has 3. Murray, this is actually his free agent year, so, you know, he's a threat to be traded. DeAndre Hunter's got 4 more years. Hawks are pretty well tied into the guys they've got right now. So, again, trades, possibilities. Someone would be interested in Trae Young if they put him on the block. I'm sure somebody would be interested in DeJounte Murray if they put him on the block. As an expiring, there is a certain value in that, but at the same time, anybody that wants Murray would presumably want to then re-sign him afterwards, so it's a little bit different. But then Capella, I mean, we're talking $43 million over 2 seasons. That's a hard contract to move. So then that brings us into the front court, because I don't think I want anything to do with John Collins. I think he probably still gets drafted too early this coming year. Clint Capella, Onyeka Okongwu, both extremely interesting. Capella was number 41 on a per-game basis this year in only 26.5 minutes per game. Okongwu was number 75 this year in 23 minutes per game. And you're like, damn, those add up to closer to 50 and not 48. Yeah. Well, Capella missed, like, what was it, 2-3 weeks in the middle of the season for something, and he had a couple of nagging injuries. Okongwu played 80 out of 82 ball games, by the way, also a really nice stat for him. But when he filled in for Capella, that was the real juicy stuff. That was the top 40, you know, whatever it was, 2-3 weeks. And the rest of the time, Okongwu kind of settled around that 85, 90, 95 range, which, of course, means each of these guys is worth drafting. They are extraordinarily fantasy-friendly from a stat set perspective. Capella, a better rebounder. Okongwu, a better foul shooter. Defensive stats, eerily similar in terms of what they do per minute on steals and blocks. Okongwu just a little bit better this year than Capella per minute. Not by a ton. But what that also tells you is that even if the minutes pivot a little bit, even like it, let's say Capella drops from 26.5 down to 25, and Okongwu moves up from 23 to 24 or 25. And again, I get it, that equals more than 48, but you figured each of those guys is going to miss some game this coming year, and that's where they'd get that little minutes bump. They can still post value inside the top 100. We know this because we can just look at their per-minute production. Okongwu only needs about 21 minutes to get inside the top 100. Capella only needs about 21, 22, 23 minutes to get inside the top 100. There's more than enough there, and the only way that that one implodes is if Quinn Snyder decides that John Collins at the five is the way to go. Because if you carve 6 or 7 minutes out at center for Collins, then suddenly you're talking about Capella and Okongwu splitting, what, 40, 41, 42 minutes. That's not quite enough for both of them. It's probably enough for one, but probably not both. Still, I don't know where these guys are going to go. Capella got drafted like at 80 to 90 range last year, and Okongwu got drafted outside the top 100. I'm not sure Capella gets drafted any earlier. I don't think people looked at his season and thought, that was pretty good. But it was. It was pretty good. And same thing with Okongwu. I don't know how many people looked at his season and thought, I got myself a pretty good fantasy season right now. I feel like the only people that felt that way were the ones that had him for the 3 weeks that Capella was hurt, right in the middle of the season. And they got those big Mondo Jumbo Juicy games out of Okongwu. And maybe a couple down the stretch. Remember, he had a few games where he got a couple extra minutes. But that's probably only like 10 to 20% of fantasy managers, if that. I think a lot of fantasy managers saw Okongwu's season, saw 10.7 boards, and thought, meh. But they're going to meh their way right past a really intriguing fantasy stat set. 0.7 steals, 1.3 blocks, 64% from the field, 78 at the foul line, only one turnover. Meanwhile, Capella, everybody wants to be down on Capella. Everybody wants to anoint Okongwu as the starter, but we still haven't seen it. And Clint was at 12-11 with 1.9 defensive stats and 65% from the field, and somehow managed to get his free throw number up to 60 this year. I don't know if that sticks, but regardless, he was number 41. I think there's a very real chance that both Atlanta centers are draft day values next year, but we'll just have to wait and see where they actually go. And then you get into a little bit of the dregs. Bogdan Bogdanovic, can he actually have value on this team as long as both DeJounte Murray and Trae Young are healthy? Probably not. Sadiq Bey, as long as Collins and Hunter are healthy? Probably not. So let's not waste our time with it. And let's go ahead and tie a beautiful little crimson bow. What the hell color are the Hawks? What are they technically? That's not crimson. It's some other red. Let's tie a Hawks logo-colored bow on this week of Fantasy NBA Today. Again, check out manscaped.com. Promo code ETHOS20. Get your Father's Day gift over there now while you still got 2 weeks to have that bad boy delivered. It makes your life so easy. That's the best damn reason I can give you right now. Get your Father's Day gift at manscaped.com because it's just easy. You don't have to dig deep into Amazon's used dregs or Etsy or whatever it is that you're like, I got to figure something out for Father's Day. And then at the last minute, you're getting a money clip. Stop that. Don't do that. They don't need it. Just go to manscaped.com. Take care of it now. Super easy. Save yourself the time. Just get it done right now, today, ETHOS20. Oh, and by the way, as we're wrapping up here, Frank Vogel has just been hired as the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Oh, my goodness. Doop, 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 doop. How about that? Frank Vogel, who was unfairly blamed for why the Lakers were failing in the Russell Westbrook experiment, gets another shot. Do the Suns have what it takes to go get a title, to go play some defense? Because that's what Vogel's going to be expecting out of them. This will be a fun new wrinkle. We talk about Phoenix at some point, week or two down the line here. Good for Frank. That's fun. All right. No, but that's not, I mean, it's fun news, but it's not really big for the fantasy side. Let's all roll into the weekend. This is Fantasy NBA Today, a Sports Ethos, sportsethos.com presentation. I am Dan Bespris. I'll talk to you guys on social at Dan Bespris. Yes, the Iron Man streak broken this week, but we're at 4 now. Could it get to 5? Find out on Monday. All right. See you guys. We'll talk to you Monday.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.